Our next case of the morning is number 043496, the United States against Walter Martin. Mr. Goodrich.
May it please the court. We're here this morning on a direct appeal of Mr. Martin's conviction in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Indiana. Emsel Division Judge Young. I was his trial attorney, and I also represent him on appeal pursuant to the Criminal Justice Act. This case is very similar, or let me put it this way, not dissimilar to the first case heard by the panel this morning, in that it involves a traffic stop. And it involves questions of is a traffic stop reasonable, or does it continue to be reasonable where officers engage in certain conduct which increase the scope and the duration of the stop. Now, it was discussed previously that the Childs decision states that officers are able to engage in questioning that is outside the strict purview of the reason for the stop. In this case, no one disputes that Walter Martin was driving the vehicle on 41, United States Highway 41 South, south of Princeton, heading towards Evansville, and that he was speeding when he was observed by Officer Wood, and Officer Wood rightfully pulled him over for speeding. That is undisputed, uncontested. However, the evidence after that becomes somewhat contested. And Mr. Martin's argument for suppression is that even though officers are able to engage in this type of questioning, that doesn't obviate, or the Child's decision doesn't erase from existence, this court's well-founded reasoning in Valance, which was a 1997 decision of this court. And I believe that's true. I believe there is some flexibility room for a trooper in the field to ask questions as long as they don't become inconvenient, as long as it doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment. But here we're talking about a seizure which ultimately lasted for the better part of an hour, a complete hour.
Did Martin or his adult passengers possess a valid driver's license at the time of the stop? And if not, we're going to have to talk about Dumas.
Absolutely. The exact answer to that question was Mr. Martin did not have a valid driver's license in his possession, but it was confirmed through official police channels, which means through dispatch running the records of the Illinois Bureau of Motor Vehicles, that Walter Martin was in fact licensed out of the state of Illinois and possessed a valid driver's license. At that point in the state of Indiana, that becomes infraction or petty offense, which is citable by citation. Similar to a speeding ticket. So Mr. Martin was speeding. He properly identified himself by name, gave the officer sufficient information to confirm his identity, even though he could not locate the license in his vehicle, and he was searching his vehicle. This is on the videotape. The officer called him back to the car, first ran a search of the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicle Records, came up with nothing, and then ran a search of the Illinois and actually confirmed a valid driver's license number. So at that point, the officer knew that he was a licensed driver.
Now, if there were no rental papers in the car and presumably no registration papers because it was a rental car, how did Martin prove registration and ownership? I mean, could the officers have justified the delay by taking time to verify registration and ownership? I mean, they certainly are not obliged to take him at his word
that
the true renter, loaned him his car.
That is an excellent point. Excellent.
Oh, thanks.
And as a matter of fact, that's what the trial court and the government have hung their hat on in this case. They're saying that Mr. Martin had borrowed a car from an individual that was a rental car from Enterprise, and because of that, he wasn't free to leave. Well, that's only true if Enterprise reports that it's stolen or that it should be taken as stolen. You rent a car, most rental agreements will have a provision in there saying if you're not the actual driver, then you shouldn't be driving it. However, that's not a criminal offense. This is one of the things that I needed the evidentiary hearing on.
But is it a legitimate reason to keep him there?
It's a legitimate reason to keep the car.
Well, are you driving the car without the owner's consent?
Well, according to my client, no. According to the state trooper on the scene, he doesn't know. So the state trooper's remedy is to take the vehicle. Seize the
person into custody until he ascertains whether or not it is a stolen vehicle. Because in his mind, the officer, he believes it is.
The officer in this case was able to, I believe, was able to contact Enterprise. And it wasn't a question of whether it was a stolen vehicle. It was simply that Enterprise wanted the vehicle and that it should be returned. Or taken by the
officer. But there is someone operating it without their consent, Enterprise's consent. So, therefore, isn't it a vehicle being operated in violation of the law?
Maybe in violation of contract, but not in violation of Indiana criminal law, no.
You can operate someone's vehicle without the person's consent, whether it be a dealer or the owner of the car?
Well, I think the distinction here would be that it was leased. My client was under the impression that he could drive the vehicle because it was loaned to him by another individual. That is what I believe. In addition, my client was never charged with any type of theft because there wasn't a basis for that.
Doesn't mean he was charged. That's got nothing to do with it. But could the officer hold him and detain him for that investigation?
My argument is no. I don't believe he could have. I think the officer had the right to seize the vehicle.
Oh, I'll ask.
But I don't believe he had the right to detain an individual on that basis. The reasoning for the trooper Wood here, and this is why I'd requested the evidentiary hearing, and I didn't get an evidentiary hearing in this case because of the vehicle issue. Or that's how I perceive, or how I have read page 5 of the district court's ruling, which is page 10 of my short appendix. The simple fact of the matter is, Trooper Wood had pulled my client over, was asking him some basic questions, had verified my client had a valid driver's license, and while he was verifying that, if you look at exhibits A and B to my motion to suppress evidence presented before the trial court, there's two different stories by Trooper Woods and then by Trooper Hornbeck. One is Trooper Woods says he contacted Trooper Hornbeck, the second is that the trooper indicates that he contacted Mr. Wood, which would be the interdiction officer contacting Mr. Wood, who's the state patrolman who made the stop. I think that's important because where I believe Mr. Wood made the decision to continue to detain Mr. Martin was when he was calling in for the driver's license. If you read the interdiction officer statement, which is Exhibit B, he states that he had prior intelligence on Mr. Martin, who also went by aliases, was transporting narcotics between Chicago, Illinois, and Evansville, Indiana. He had been listening to the radio. He makes two different reports at the time. The first is 505 is when he responded or contacted Mr. Wood, but then he lists a 515 response time for when he actually arrived on the scene, I assume. So he would have contacted Mr. Wood at that time. He heard Mr. Martin come over the radio when he was running the ID. Now, if you examine the video that was produced in this case, Trooper Wood had a video. It had functioning audio. But state troopers in the state of Indiana are equipped with switches on their belt, which allow them to cue that on and off. Because of the
troopers... Which allows what?
Allows them to cue the volume on and off.
Yeah.
And when that happened, when these phone calls were coming in, the state trooper stopped the audio on the tape, and that is omitted from the tape. Now, if what I had suspected were true, and if I were allowed to pursue this at a suppression hearing, what I forethought the evidence may have been is that the interdiction officer, upon hearing that Mr. Martin had been stopped for speeding, had instructed the state trooper to hold him there, Mr. Wood to hold him there. And that makes sense along the timeline in that the interdiction officer says he was contacted at 5:05 and responded at the highway at 5:15.
You have expired. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Brookman.
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Matt Brookman. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Indiana. I'm in the Evansville branch office down near Princeton, and I was the trial lawyer on this case. I would ask this court to affirm the trial court's ruling on the seizure of the evidence from the June 5th traffic stop and also affirm the conviction in this case. If I could respond or elaborate on your question to appellant's counsel, Your Honor, The issue of the duration of the stop is, in my view, somewhat of a red herring, precisely for the reason that you touched on, and that is that this was an Enterprise rental car, and the record at trial and the record on appeal was, in fact, that Trooper Wood contacted Enterprise rental car, and they confirmed with him that it was not in Mr. Martin's name or his passenger's name, and they instructed Trooper Wood to seize the car and have it impounded and taken to a tow lot. So there was never an issue of Mr. Martin or his passenger driving away from this traffic stop once the traffic stop lawfully occurred. Furthermore, Your Honors, Mr. Martin did not have a valid driver's license that he could produce to the trooper. He searched for it extensively inside the car and outside the car. They took time and went back to the patrol car. Trooper Wood called in and initially confirmed with Indiana that there was no Indiana license, then confirmed with Illinois that there was a valid driver's license for a Walter Martin. But as the court, I think, picked up on, this wasn't the end of the questions, really, because they had to confirm that this was Walter Martin. And, in fact, when the troopers went to the passenger, she identified the driver as a Mr. Bolden. So there was a lot of confusion. Without any driver's license, without any form of ID, and without being the person that had this car, it's unreasonable to think that this traffic stop was going to be a 5, 10, or even probably 30-minute traffic stop at that point.
What is the longest delay that we found reasonable for a speeding stop?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I did not catalog those cases, so I could only tell you from my own experience that I've seen delays of 45 minutes. I don't think there is an outside number because it depends on the circumstances of the stop.
In other words, if the officers were justified in detaining Mr. Martin to check out registration and ownership, would it matter that they instead used that justifiable delay, shall we call it, to wait for the drug dog instead of actually investigating the registration and ownership?
Well, no, I don't think it would matter. And what typically happens is that while they're checking out license and registration, they've made a call to the interdiction officer who says, wait a second. If this is in fact Walter Martin, I have confidential informant information that tells me he's a drug trafficker, and I'm going to respond to the scene. And in this instance, the other trooper responded to the scene within 15 minutes. The drug dog officer from Gibson County responded a short time after that. So that is typically what happens.
All this is happening at about 5 in the morning.
4:50 in the morning is when the actual stop occurred. 5:05 is when Trooper Hornbrook, the second trooper, arrived on the scene of the stop. And furthermore, the duration, notwithstanding the fact that this car was never leaving the scene because it was undrivable from the scene, essentially, by the defendant, notwithstanding that, Your Honors, the facts that played out after the initial stop justified an extended duration for this stop. First being that there was this confusion about who Mr. Martin was, that he had no identification, that there was conflicting statements between his passenger as to who he was, The suspicions that the initial trooper had as far as the inconsistencies in his statement as to where he was coming from and where he was going. But then, at least within the first 10-15 minutes of the stop, the fact that he contacts a narcotics trooper, a trooper that works narcotics cases, and says, "This guy is a target. We have information on him that he's a drug transporter." That gives them additional reason to extend the stop and examine the circumstances. Once the drug dog is taken around the exterior of the car, they certainly have cause to search the inside of the car at that point. And once they find the contraband inside the car, both adults are arrested, which leaves nothing left but to take the children into custody, and that's where the drugs were found. So based on that, Your Honor, I believe that the district court correctly ruled that the evidence was admissible in this case. On the issue of the lack of a hearing, I would just briefly point out to this court that Mr. Martin, in his motions to suppress, attached all of the police reports verbatim to the motions as exhibits. There was no disagreement about the testimony that the officers would have if there was a hearing. Mr. Martin pointed out that he did not have an opportunity to cross-examine Trooper Wood. However, I would note to the court that this is a case that after the suppression hearing went to trial, Trooper Wood testified at trial. Defense counsel would have certainly had an opportunity to cross-examine him and did have an opportunity to cross-examine him as to any issues that might have remained unresolved. I would submit to the court that there were no unresolved issues as far as the facts of the case, and there was no need for a hearing in this matter. And I would again ask the court to affirm, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Brookman. Mr. Goodrich, your time had expired, but the court does want to thank you for your fine efforts on behalf of your client as appointed counsel in this case. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.